He's the columnist for the Register Guard. See what he's up to on the cover of the sports section. Catch up on registerguard.com. On Twitter, it's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, a wonderful Tuesday to you, sir. How's it going?
Hello, Steve. I'm doing well. How are you today?
All righty. The story you wrote last week, first of all, you got me reading about a wrestling tournament, so kudos to you. 600 wrestlers in Portland, 2 days, and you had two really interesting local stories, Blake Nelson of Cresswell. So a year ago, he's about to compete. He started experiencing some pretty scary, pretty painful stuff, ended up in the hospital. So, again, for folks who didn't catch it, or either way, the diagnosis and how did he actually end up wrestling again?
Well, okay, first of all, so you're saying you're not a huge WWE fan, Steve?
The truth
is, can
I
surmise that from your comment?
Actual wrestling, which I did in middle school, I like. WWE, WWF, I've actually been vocally against.
Okay, well, it's good to know where you stand on that. I've been wondering. Blake Nelson from Cresswell. It's a pretty amazing story. So about a year ago, he was at the state wrestling tournament and started noticing some weird pain in his shoulders and his legs. He started to run a fever, just all kinds of weird symptoms. His mouth swelled up. So his parents, obviously very concerned, took him to the doctor. The doctor didn't know what to do, so they sent him to the hospital. It turns out he had something that's pretty hard to pronounce. It's necrotizing fasciitis.
Jeez.
And basically, it's a flesh-eating bacteria. So that's a pleasant thought for you there.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing what Blake had to go through. He had 10 surgeries. He was in the hospital for 13 days, a very serious thing, a potentially life-threatening condition, obviously. But he was able to come back from that, get back on the wrestling mat, and he actually was competing in the state tournament last week. So kind of a cool story.
It's a really cool story. Then the other one was Dylan Porter from Elmira, and in that school district, days are shorter on Wednesdays. So he gets home on Wednesday, December 7th, and he finds his mom on the floor. Like you wrote, her face is turning blue. What the heck happened, and how about the way he reacted?
Yeah, so this is the other kind of local wrestling story that I stumbled into. So Dylan came home that afternoon, and his mother had been, I guess, doing some electrical work on their house and had shocked herself and had gone into cardiac arrest. So Dylan gets home from school, finds her there on the floor, and actually was able to do CPR until the paramedics arrived. And they told him that quite likely he saved his mom's life by walking in when he did and having the presence of mind to do that while waiting for the ambulance to arrive. So another pretty amazing story, you know, sort of similar. I kind of tied them together because it's a couple small town kids, wrestlers, both of whom have had, you know, pretty incredible years in terms of what they've gone through. And then for both of those guys to be competing at the state tournament, both of them, I believe, were number one seeds. And
yeah,
I think Dylan went on to win the state championship. So that was kind of a neat thing, too.
Yeah, one of them pinned their opponent, I think, won at 285, and Nelson, I think, fell in the third round. But either way, it was just the coincidence of where they were, where they were from, where they ended up was awesome. And again, for folks who missed it, archive it at registerguard.com. I want to get to your piece on Sabrina Ionescu, who we had the joy of interviewing a couple weeks ago, just named Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, and you wrote about her competitive nature. I look at her and I see how poised she is, especially with the media, and is it because she's so accomplished, has played international, been in the public eye, you know, you think that ties into her overall demeanor and how she just never gets rattled on the court?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a connection there. She's been there before. She's not unaccustomed to the big stage. Now, college basketball is still a different deal. It's still a step up, even for her having played at the highest levels of, you know, international amateur basketball, high school basketball. There's still a transition when you go up to the college level. And it was interesting for that column. I talked with her high school coach, who was also her club coach, so basically the person who had coached her for the last 10 years. And he was talking about how one of the transitions for her coming to the college level was just dealing with losing, because it rarely happened for her. Her high school team hardly ever lost, and when they did, she took it really, really hard. And you know, her high school coach said she really needed to go to a program where they were going to win, or else she was not going to be a very happy person. And you know, it was kind of, you know, counterintuitive, I guess, then, that she did come to Oregon, which was a rebuilding program, and you know, certainly they're pointed the right direction and the future is really bright. But she knew when she signed on at Oregon, not like she was coming to UConn, you know. they're not winning 100 games in a row. There's going to be some ups and downs. And they've kind of dealt with that this season. And even, you know, right now as we speak, they've had kind of a tough finish to the regular season and are trying to bounce back in the Pac-12 tournament. So that's just all part of the transition process for Sabrina coming from high school.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, because 11 days ago after Oregon beat Utah, they were 8-7 in the conference. They had jumped into the top 30 of the power rankings, and it looked like they were pretty much a lock. Then they lost to Colorado, and this weekend just got swept by the Northern California schools. And even though the Pac-12 is tops in the RPI, is it safe to say that they let it get away a little bit and at least have to beat Arizona in round one to make a better NCAA tournament case?
Yeah, they really had a chance to lock it up in the last week and let a couple of them get away. Losing to Colorado, that hurts. Losing at home to Cal, I think that's the one that really hurts, because you know, it's a team in the bottom half of the standings. You're playing at home. Really needed, I think, one more win to really solidify themselves as an NCAA team. So, and then coming back Sunday against Stanford, hey, Stanford's really good. There's no shame in losing that game, but that's another opportunity Oregon had to really really stamp their ticket, I guess, to the tournament. So they do have some work to do now at the Pac-12 tournament. I don't know if it's one win, maybe two wins. Certainly two would put them in really good position, because they'll get Washington in the second round if they beat Arizona. But the one thing I don't think they can do is lose that first game against Arizona. To have four straight losses going into the tournament and be under 500 in the Pac-12, that would be a pretty nervous selection process for Oregon.
I did not realize the Huskies loomed second. We continue with Austin Meeker, the Register Guard. I want to go to Port St. Lucie, the site of where the New York Mets train, and today's lead story is not about David Wright or Jay Bruce in right field, but Tim Tebow's statistics in the batting cages. Does this rate as high as I think on the most ridiculous sports coverage scale?
So Tebow's still doing the baseball thing.
Yeah, apparently
I wasn't
so.
Sure. It'd been about 5 minutes since I'd heard about him, so I wasn't sure. Like, I actually think, you know, as a guy, there's probably quite a bit to admire about Tim Tebow. Probably not entirely his fault that he's become so overexposed, but yes, you know, you think about meaningless sporting events. You got spring training, and then you've got batting practice, both of which are pretty meaningless in and of themselves. And then when you've got batting practice before spring training, that's about as low as it gets, isn't it?
I think so. And it was the first thing I heard this morning, and I was like, I should have gone to school for something different. This is ridiculous.
We're in the wrong business.
Yep. Let's get to Duck Men's Hoops. Cal's a pretty good team, a tournament team. The game at Berkeley was tight. They won it. Stanford, you know, they're kind of playing out the string, but can we chalk up the close nature of that game to in league, on the road is always viewed as difficult. Cardinal have a little more beef that gave Oregon trouble. And we were talking a little earlier. You go and sweep on the road this time of year. Yeah, it's close. Maybe they were disappointing in their overall performance, but you kind of take it and run.
Oh, yeah, for sure. When you're playing on the road, it doesn't matter how you do it. It doesn't matter if it takes a buzzer beater. It doesn't matter if it's ugly. It doesn't matter if it's a one-point win in the last seconds. A win on the road, you take it and run. And especially at those two places where Oregon historically has not had much success. I mean, there have you look back at the history of Oregon basketball, there have not been many sweeps in the Bay Area for Oregon. So I don't think you can nitpick too much about those two games. Now, certainly, are there things Oregon needs to do better? Yeah, definitely. Coming out of that Stanford game, Dana Altman's been harping about defensive rebounding, and Stanford exposed that. You know, Reed Travis didn't play the first time when these teams played in Eugene. That was a big factor in that game. Oregon's going to have to rebound better if they're going to make a run in the tournament. That's absolutely true. But, look, playing on the road with a Pac-12 title on the line, knowing that if you slip up at either one of those places, it's probably over. I mean, there was so much pressure on Oregon to win both those games and hope that UCLA beats Arizona. And all the pieces fell together now to give them a chance to win the Pac-12 on Saturday. That's a pretty good feeling for Oregon.
Oh, yeah. The fact that whatever they wanted, I mean, there's still one seed out there. Final thought. We know Dylan Brooks hit the clutch gamers against UCLA here, Cal last Wednesday, and then did it defensively to help swipe the ball against Reed Travis on Saturday. And I know the Markkanen kid on Arizona, Lonzo Ball, UCLA, they're one and done, which, as a rule, those guys don't win Conference Player of the Year. So how legit is Brooks' case as a Pac-12 Player of the Year, just assuming they beat Oregon State and he has that best player on the best team kind of thing going for him?
Yeah, I think it's a really close race between Brooks and Lonzo Ball. I don't think it's necessarily a shoe-in either way. And I'm curious to see which way the coaches go on it. Because you mentioned, and I think it's true, that in general, the default is the player of the year goes to the best player on the best team. And if Oregon ends up winning the title, I think it'll be hard not to give it to Dylan Brooks. But Lonzo Ball's got a really strong case, too. I mean, the thing with Brooks, there are a couple different ways to look at it. You know, are you looking at primarily what he did in conference play, or are you looking at his whole season? Because clearly he's taken it up a level in conference play. His best moments have come in the Pac-12 at the end of games, and nobody's been more clutch this year than Dylan. But it took him a while. His non-conference numbers weren't great. You know, he's missed a couple games in Pac-12.
Yep.
So over the course of the whole season, I think you'd probably say Lonzo Ball has had the better complete season, but Dylan Brooks is the best player on the team that's probably going to win the championship, and that does mean something.
No, I'll be very curious. I bet it's a really tight vote. All right, you have an enjoyable time in that toddling town known as Corvallis this weekend, and we will catch up with you next Tuesday. Thanks, Austin.
Okay, talk to you later, Steve.
All right, take it easy.